older than Israel. We are the Yam HaNif. At the beginning of the Christian movement, so the Talmud records that the Christians were harassing the Jews, and they claimed that we lost our status as Am HaNif because we didn't accept Osa Ho'ish. Talmud relates about a debate that took place in pantomime in front of the governor of the region, that the men, the early Christian, turned his back to the rabbi, and walked away, and he shook his hand at the rabbi, showing that we are no longer the Am HaNif. Kadosh Baruch Hu turns his back on the Jewish people, he doesn't consider us any longer Am HaNif. The rabbi, in response, in this pantomime debate, raised his hand with his fist clenched, waving like this. So the governor didn't understand what the whole debate was all about. So he asked the rabbi, Was it there, Gazak? What did he say? What did you say? So he says, the Christian is trying to indicate that the Ribbono Shel Olam walked away from the Jewish people. He turns his back on us. We're no longer the Am HaNif. We lost our special status. And what did you answer him by waving your hand and shaking your fist? He said, no, the Ribbono Shel Olam is saying, Od Yada Netuya. The fact that the Jewish people are singled out for such suffering amongst all of the nations of the world, that itself is an indication that we are still the Am HaNif. Why HaKadosh Baruch Hu is punishing us in such a unique way, such an unusual way, you have to figure out. But we still did not lose our status as the Am HaNif. You have different accounts of different communities where the Nazis were torturing the Jews, and on many different occasions they would ask the Jewish victims, do you still believe that you are the Am HaNif? We have in the various accounts, many of them responded, yes, absolutely, with the Am HaNif. We would never think of doing, we would never think of acting like you animals. We are certainly the Am HaNif. The fact that the Jews were singled out from among all the nations of the world to suffer such a Holocaust, such a Shoah, that itself is an indication that we are the Am HaNif. So look, the Jews, the percentage of the Jews and the population of the world is much less than 1%. The Jews have contributed to civilization and to culture and to art and sciences and everything much more than 1%. We are certainly the Am HaNif in all areas. In Torah, mitzvahs, and culture, and science, and everything, in every way. And certainly the fact that we suffered so much and we contributed way more than our percentage of the population is a clear indication that we retain the status of the Am HaNif. I just want to speak a little bit about the Nodi Yehuda. We visited his kever this morning. He was the Rav in the city of Prague. Nodi Yehuda is quoted very often in the commentaries on the side of the page of the Shulchan Aruch with respect to many different issues. It's interesting, Nodi Yehuda, you quoted Professor Lyman, quoted before from one of the drushes of the Nodi Yehuda, Shabbos Shuvah drusha. So he published a few collections of his drushes. So it's interesting, and usually on Shabbos Shuvah, like on Shabbos HaGadol, he would give a whole drush and explain Agaritas and explain Psukim, Taich and Apasik, Alderach HaDrash and Alderach HaGadol. But he also records the specific averis that he gave Perchocha to the Balabatim about in his drushes for Shabbos Shuvah. So one of them, he speaks about Netilas Yadayim. Many of us washed our hands in the washroom, and then we walked until we got to the bus. It took us a while until we began to say Amen. So the Gemara has it in Chulin, where all the laws of the Tilus Yadayim appear. So the Gemara says, Note the Lord of Yodam Shachris. A person can wash the Tilus Yadayim early in the morning. If he knows that he's going to eat bread at a later time in the day, he won't have water available. So the Gemara says, a person can wash his hands early in the morning, who must know of, and have in mind that he plans to eat at a later time. So the Rabbi Yehuda pointed out that his balabatim are making a mistake, and the mistake is still made ado yom hazeh. Many people make the same mistake. He says when the people are in the middle of a conversation and they go to wash until it's time, so they still continue to talk. They talk. They wash their hands and still talk until they say the bracha al netilas yadayim. After they say the bracha al netilas yadayim, then they don't want to say a peep until they say hamotzi lechem min haaretz. So Rabbi Yehuda says that this is incorrect. If anything, it should be the reverse. The Olam, the din, always requires that a bracha should be recited immediately prior to performing a mitzvah. With respect to Netilas Yadayim, like with respect to Lit Benshin on Erev Shabbos, so the Minik has it, it's questionable whether it's really a din. The Mishnah Berurah points out it's really only a minik. Minik has it for various reasons that we choose to say the bracha after we wash our hands. And after the balabasta lights the candles, the Erev Shabbos, then she says the bracha. So Nadi Yehuda writes in his drasha, this is what he told the balabatim, under normal conditions when you recite a bracha before you put on a tefillin, before you put on a talis, and before you blow shofar, if you talk, if you're mafsik in between the bracha and the performance of the mitzvah, then the din requires you have to repeat the bracha again. The bracha has to be mitzurah, has to relate to the maisa mitzvah. Here, when you first perform the mitzvah, then recite the bracha afterwards. So the ikar din hafsik is in between the netilas yadayim and the reciting of the bracha, or in between the hadlokas ner shabbos and the reciting of the bracha lahadlik ner shal shabbos afterwards. He says, and if you talk in between, then the bracha is going to be a bracha of atzadah, because it's not going to relate back to the mitzvah. Tell the fellow, should go wash again. Why should he wash again? You go to the mitzvah without the bracha anyway. If you would have said the bracha over lasiyas and before performing a mitzvah, and then you would talk in between the bracha and the mitzvah, we would require you should say the bracha again. The bracha that you said before became a bracha of atzadah, because it's not mitzvah if it doesn't relate to the mitzvah. But if you already did the mitzvah first, then you want to recite the bracha afterwards, you have to be careful not to talk in between the halakas, Ner Shabbos, and the bracha, or in between the Netilas Yadayim and the reciting of the bracha. Then the fact that people are so medactic not to say poo, not to say a word in between the reciting of the bracha on the Netilas Yadayim and Amotzi, so that he said, that's according to many poskim, that's only a chumrah. Ikar HaDin, many poskim would say that if somebody asks you a question, you can answer in a monosyllabic response, say yes, no, just to say a word or two, Ikar HaDin is okay, that's really only a chumrah. But he says the real din of hefsek is in between the washing up the Netilas Yadayim and the reciting of the bracha. He says that he noticed that his balabatim are in violation of this din. Then he points out in the same drasha, I told you last year and I'm going to tell you again this year, that when you eat bagels you have to say Hamotzi Lechem Min Haaretz, you have to wash until it's Yadayim, you have to bench Birchas Hamazon. Apparently he saw many of his balabatim were saying Gardening in the Zayas, they weren't washing until it's Yadayim, they weren't reciting Birchas Hamazon. So he says that this is incorrect, and he threatens to resign from his Rabbanus over the Hamotzi on the bagels. He says there must be something wrong with me. I told you this last year in the Shabbos Shuvah Drasha, and you still didn't correct this error, so it must be that I'm not a good Baal Masbi. I'm not right to serve in the rabbinate for these Balabatim. I just wonder, parenthetically, what language did he speak in? Did he speak the Czech language? Or did they understand Yiddish or Polish? How did he communicate with the Balabatim? I don't know. The Drasha is written in Hebrew. I doubt that he delivered the Drasha in Hebrew. He must have delivered. So he says, there must be something wrong with my ability to explain to the Balabatim, because I see that they're still saying very many messages. You mentioned earlier that Prague was a city that had a lot of problems. It was a very preetzesdicke city, like New York City. It was the center of all the preetzes. And Rabbi Yehuda was called upon to deal with a lot of these issues of preetzes. So one of his tshuvas, he writes, I'm an old man already, give me a break, send the shadows with the preetzes and the zainas and so on, send it to someone else. Shein enough, I had enough during my lifetime dealing with all of these issues. He has several tshuvas, they're not all from the period of Prague. Several Shabbos, he speaks about various issues of mitzvahs that became very famous. There's one very famous wild tshuva, the Rav Ploni, the Medina Plonitz. He doesn't, usually he writes the name of the person to whom he's sending the letter. So here, Bnei HaKavod, he doesn't say the name of the rabbi. There was a prominent rabbi who was looking back into his past. They didn't have a dormitory, they didn't have a cafeteria in the dormitory where the boys ate. They used to, they played Nes and Tech, they used to eat by Balabatim. So this boy is married, has children already, so he looks back, he's a prominent rabbi in the community, sends a letter to the Nerd of Yudah, what should I do? I'm looking back to my teenage years, he learned in a yeshiva, and every Shabbos he would eat by a certain Balabas. Now Shabbos afternoon, the Balabas would go to learn a shiur in Gemara, and he didn't realize what he was doing. Every Shabbos he had an affair with the Balabas's wife. He didn't realize that this is from Naseres Hatibras, Lysina. Then he went and he married their daughter. And now he lives happily ever after. So now he's trying to figure out, is he obligated to go tell his father-in-law what happened? Because the wife is a Saita Asura Labayla. But it'll be a pusha for the whole father-in-law's family. It'll be a pusha for his family. So sometimes we say, the Gemara has a whole discussion, Mishum Kavod Abriyas, you're permitted to violate sometimes mitzvahs, sometimes averis. Here, the father-in-law and the mother-in-law are living together, the Isser, because she's really a Saita Asura Labayla. But they're violating the Aver B'Shegek. The father-in-law does know the facts. The mother-in-law knows the facts of what happened, but she doesn't know the din. Obviously, she doesn't know the din. So, do you say that Mishum Kavod Abriyas, you can allow them to continue to violate the Avera, the Kum V'Yaseh, since they're violating a B'Shegek? Or do you say no? They're violating, the in-laws are violating the Avera by remaining together. So that's an Avera, the Kum V'Yaseh, so even though it's B'Shegek, You have to notify them, and you have to ruin everybody's marriage, and so everybody has to suffer this year. So Yehuda says lechumre. He says he has to tell the father-in-law. He says ein biyodi lahakriya. He points out this is a dispute between the Rambam and the Rosh on the Gemara and Brachas on the Daf. The Rambam seems to write explicitly that even if the person who's violating the Avera is violating B'Shegek, but still it's the Kum V'Yaseh, it's an Avera Deraisa, the Kavod Abriyas is not a mitigating factor. And the Rosh disagrees and he says no, since the people who are violating the Avera are violating B'Shegek, so Kavod Abriyas does play a role. This was the night of Yehuda had to deal with the Shiloh. So that's why, obviously, he didn't write to whom the tshuva was sent. He writes, L'Rab Pleinim in Medina Pleinus. That's another famous Shiloh, also old story of priests. They used to bring him, this story occurred when he was in Yampala, before he moved, before he became the Rav in Prague. There was also a story, many of his children deal with Asian issues and so on. Kinds of preacher's issues. There's a famous tshuva where he and the Baal Shem Tov both declare that a man has to divorce his wife. The woman had an affair with someone while she was married to her husband, and the husband was a shtikal atal tefachim, and he paskened, I think, based on six or seven reasons, that the woman is not asura al bayla. So the Nadi Yehuda, so the Baal Shem Tov declared that the woman is asura al bayla, and he had to skip town. He had to leave the city because the husband was going to get the government authority to put him in prison for making such a declaration. The Nadi Yehuda couldn't leave town, he was there over there. So he wrote a whole tshuva declaring that the woman is asura al bayla, and he rips apart the six or seven studying the hakel that the husband developed. The husband was a shtikal tamachah. It's a long tshuva, famous tshuva, Simon Ayin Beis, in Chelek Aleph Nadi Yehuda, where he has stiras at the Aleph, stiras at the Beis, stiras at the Gimel. He rips apart each tzad lahakel that the husband suggested. Nadi Yehuda sent this tshuva to the Rav in Constantinople, as far as Rav the Becha Dovid. About the Shaila and Tshuva's Divrei Emes, as if the Shaila had come from Constantinople. It didn't come from there at all. Shaila came from Yampala, from his own village. But he wanted to send the Shaila to someone, so he made believe as if the Becha David had sent him the Shaila. The story goes that this they had no regular mail delivery between Yampama and Constantinople. So the story goes that the tshuva of the Noreh Yehuda that he wanted the Bev of David, the Sfardish Rav in Constantinople, to be masking with him, the Isha's Asura al-Bailo. So this letter was hand-delivered by a Jew who was traveling from Poland, from Eastern Europe, to go to Eretz Yisrael. So when he stopped off in Constantinople, before he took the boat to Eretz Yisrael, he hand-delivered the letter to the Bech HaDavid, and along with that letter, he took with him another famous letter that the Baal Shem Tov wrote to his brother-in-law, Rav Gershon Kintever, who had already lived in Eretz Yisrael. The famous letter about his Aliyas Neshama, that on Rosh Hashanah, his soul went up to heaven, and he met the Melech HaMashiach, and he asked him, Masa Yasi Mar, when are you going to come? When is Mashiach going to come already? So he told him, Mashiach Chutzim, my Nesech HaChutzim. So supposedly the story goes that these two letters were carried by the same individual. The one letter of the Noreh Yehuda in learning about the Shaila with the Seita Levaila was dropped off by the Bech HaDavid in Constantinople, and the other letter continued to go to Eretz Yisrael. They write in the history books that the Noreh Yehuda was related to the Baal Shem Tov. This is Noreh Yehuda, was a cousin of Rabbi Baal Shem Tov. And they tell all kinds of stories, the way the two of them met on different occasions, and they discussed different things. The daughter of the Noreh Yehuda, when they lived in Yampolo, used to go visit every so often by the Baal Shem Tov against the wishes of her father. Noreh Yehuda was not happy about the movement that the Baal Shem Tov began. He was opposed to Hasidus. In fact, he has a famous tshuva printed in the Sefer against reciting the Shem Yichud Kutche Berichu Hilni Mochan Mezum on the Kayim Mitzvah Poitness, that you shouldn't say that. It's against the Halacha, because the Halacha declares that whenever you do a mitzvah stoma, so stoma l'shma, we assume that the person is doing it l'shma. And if he has to make a whole declaration in advance that I have a mind to fulfill a mitzvah, this is against the Halacha. We know that he has a mind stoma l'shma. He certainly has a mind. And that's the famous tshuva where he concludes by quoting the pasuk from the Treyaser, Ki Yishorim Darchei Hashem, Tzadikim, the path of HaKadosh Baruch Hu are very straight, Tzadikim Yolchavam, Ulpoishim Mikoshluvam. So the Noreh Yehuda quoted the pasuk and he paraphrased it, Tzadikim Yolchavam, V'chassidim Mikoshluvam. So when the printer printed the Tshuva's Noreh Yehuda, so he didn't want to print such a busha, V'chassidim Mikoshluvam, so he changed it and he wrote, Tzadikim Yolchavam, Ulpoishim Mikoshluvam. He left in the word poshim. So according to the way the printer corrected the text, so the whole pasuk doesn't fit in with the whole Tshuva. The punchline is missing. So that's the famous line that the Noreh Yehuda commented to the printer. He said, what did you do? I took Poshim and I converted them into Hasidim. You took Hasidim and you converted them into Poshim. I did better than you. So the Noreh Yehuda was very opposed to all the new Chidushim of the Baal Shem Tov. And he would have not been happy if he would have heard that his daughter was going to visit by the Baal Shem Tov. He was opposed to the whole movement, to everything. So after many months of visiting by the cousin, by the mother's cousin, the Baal Shem Tov, on one occasion when they heard that the Or HaChaim HaKadosh had just passed away, so the daughter of the Noreh Yehuda told her father, this is before they moved to Prague, when he was still in Yampala, and before the Baal Shem Tov had to leave town over the issue with the Ashes Ishes Insul. So the daughter told the father, I want you to know that without your permission, without your knowledge, I was visiting by the Baal Shem Tov quite often. Today I realized that he really has Ruach HaKodesh. Because several weeks ago, when I visited by him, we were carrying on a conversation, and apropos to nothing, the Baal Shem Tov stood up, and he ripped his garment, and he sat down, and sat down. And it didn't have anything to do with the conversation that we had. And she didn't understand why he ripped his garment, but she wrote down what day it was and what time it was. What time of the day. Now, weeks later, 6 or 7 weeks later, they just got the news that the Or HaChaim HaKadosh had passed away in Eretz Yisrael. They lived in Poland, in Eastern Europe. The Or HaChaim lived in Eretz Yisrael, so they just heard now that the Or HaChaim HaKadosh had passed away exactly on that day, at that time of the day. So obviously, the Baal Shem Tov has Ruach HaKadosh, and he knew to stand up and rip Kriya over the death of the Or Chaim HaKadosh. So now the Buddha didn't know what to answer, so he made a very stern face, and he said to his daughter, I want you to know that he was over on Bal Tashtis. Because the din is that you're only allowed to rip Kriya if you have Eidim, two Eidim, or in Echad in Shulchan Aruch. But if you just know based on the Ruach HaKadosh, you're not allowed to rip Kriya. Either you rip Kriya if you're there, Bishas, and see his neshama, and you see it yourself. Of here from Eidim of Pidin, but Stam to ascertain with Ruach HaKadosh, you're not allowed to read Kriya, so Baal Shem Tov was over on Baal Tashtis. So the story goes that they went back and they told the Baal Shem Tov the comment that the Nevi Yehuda had made. He said, what do you mean? I was there for Shas Yitzias Nishama. Every story that they tell about the Baal Shem Tov with the Nevi Yehuda, so the Hasidim always add on the punchline, but it turns out that the Baal Shem Tov always won in all of the debates. Rabbi Yehuda has a tshuva where he discusses, someone raised the shaila, is it permissible to build a shul in any shape other than rectangular shape? Because the Mishkan, the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, the Bais Rishon, the Bais Sheni, the Bais Mikdoshim, the Mishkan Shila, everything was a rectangular shape, and the Bais HaKnesses is supposed to be a Mikdash Miyad. So maybe we should say that there's a halacha that you're not permitted to build a shul in any shape other than a rectangular shape. Has to be dummy the Beis HaMikdash. He says, look, we can't invent any new dinim. He doesn't think he can say such a din, but he says he recommends not to, it's hard to say even that it's a minig, but he says, let's not look for trouble. Let's not be mishana anything. Maybe al pi din it does have the status of a dinim. So he recommends that we really shouldn't, if you're building a shul, if you take over a building that's already in a hexagon shape, a pentagon shape, and you convert it into a shul, okay, make the tesis, so you leave it the way it is. But to build the shul melech atchila, the shem beis haknesses, in any shape other than rectangular, so that's what he recommends. He thinks that you really shouldn't do that. There's the famous story about the occasion that the Rabbi Yehuda called in the Baal Shem Tov to his Beis Din, and he said, look, you want to start, you're starting a new movement in Yiddishkeit, so you have to be learned to a certain degree. In order to be the founder of a movement, to be a leader, you have to be a shtikala talmid chacham. So he wanted to ask him some questions. So the story goes that it was Rosh Chodesh, so the Rabbi Yehuda asked the Baal Shem Tov an elementary question that everybody knows from the kids of Shulchan Aruch, from the Gemara, from the Shulchan Aruch. What's the din of a person daven Ma'ariv? And he forgot Yalav Yavoy in the Shmoneh Esrei. So the Gemara says, if one forgets Yalav Yavoy by Shacharis or by Mincha on Rosh Chodesh, you have to repeat the Shmoneh Esrei. But if one forgets Yalav Yavoy by Ma'ariv, so the Gemara gives a whole complicated explanation. Not so easy to understand what it means, but the Gemara says, for Ma'ariv on Rosh Chodesh, you don't have to repeat the Shmoneh Esrei. It will be Yalav Yavoy if one would forget Yalav Yavoy on Chalamai. It wouldn't make a difference whether it's Shacharis, Mincha, or Ma'ariv. But on Rosh Chodesh, the Gemara has a special explanation, a special reason why Ma'ariv you wouldn't have to repeat the Shmoneh Esrei. So that the Yehuda was faharing the Baal Shem Tov. So he asked him, what's the din if a Jew forgets Yalav Yavoy by Ma'ariv on Rosh Chodesh, does he have to repeat the Shmoneh Esrei? So the story goes that the Baal Shem Tov answered with respect. He said, Rebbe, it does make a difference for my followers or for your followers. My followers have kavan b'shas tefillah, they wouldn't forget Yalav Yavoy the first time. And your followers, if you tell them that they have to repeat the Shmoneh Esrei, I guarantee you they'll forget Yalav Yavoy the second time also. So the Hasidic version of the story goes that it happens that that Rosh Chodesh morning, the Nevi Yehuda forgot Yalav Yavoy. Shacharis, and when he repeated the Shmoneh Esrei the second time, he got Yalav Yavoy the second time also. That's how the Hasidic version of the story goes. None of Yehuda's opinions are always quoted in the commentaries on the bottom of the page in the Shulchan Aruch. These are some of the famous psalms. I'll just mention one more. We're talking about the kings doing a lot of hunting. The Nevi Yehuda has a famous tshuva where he says, it's only permissible to go hunting if you do it for parnasa, because you're putting yourself into a shtikala sakana. If a person puts himself into sakana for the sake of parnasa, so then we have a pasuk. You're allowed to, if it's not such a such a serious sakana, it's a slight sakana that's done for fun, that's not permissible.
This was wonderful. We all enjoyed learning from me, myself. Thank you very much. I just interrupted because the...
like the British government maybe doesn't have the status of Malchus.
Professor Lyman told us how close the Hassan Sefer was with his Rebbe Rav Nosson Nachbe, especially after his Bar Mitzvah, when Rav Nosson Nachbe encouraged him to leave his parents' home to move in with him. So the Hassan Sefer writes in several places that he was always around his Rebbe, he always watched him, and he knew what his Rebbe did, and he knew what his Rebbe did not do. And he can infer halachas from the fact that he didn't see the Rebbe do something, because he felt he had watched him totally, all day and all night. So we have in the Shubas of the Hassan Sefer, he says his Rebbe had planted new trees, and the halacha says that the fruits that grow the first 3 years on the trees, even outside of Eretz Yisrael, are also ba'achila and also ba'anoch. You're not allowed to eat them, you're not allowed to sell them to gain any benefit. So he says his Rebbe had horrible trees, and he saw the Rebbe didn't eat the fruits, but he never saw the Rebbe burn the fruits. And the Mishnah says that Orlo and Kloy HaKerem are Nisrofim, and on Nisrofim he's supposed to burn them. So he wondered how come the Rebbe didn't burn it. So, and it cannot be that the Rebbe burnt it and he didn't watch, he didn't see, because he was there all the time by his Rebbe. He watched everything that his Rebbe did. So he comes up with a fantastic chiddush that there is no mitzvah to burn Orlo. He says the Boni HaMitzvah, all the various Rishonim, who list off the 613 mitzvahs and 248 mitzvahs asay, nobody mentions that this is one of the 248 mitzvahs asay, to burn the Orlo. So he says the Mishnah never intended to tell us that it's a mitzvah to burn the Orlo. The Mishnah just says, if you burn the Orlo, the ashes will be mutter, and it's rough and upper mutter. But if you're not interested in using the ashes, so you can throw the Orlo out in the garbage, there never was a mitzvah to burn it in the first place. This is a, in yeshivas, most of the Talmidim are not familiar with this comment of the Hassam Sefer, because it's famous from Rav Chaim Soloveitchik that he is not in agreement with this. He thinks that all these are hanoah, that you're not allowed to gain any benefit from the Orlo and the Kloya Kerem, is because it's a mitzvah dafka to go out of your way to burn the Orlo. And getting hanoah constitutes a bitl of mitzvah, but the Hassam Sefer is certainly entitled to his opinion. He's not mechuyev to agree with Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, who came later. And he was medayik this, he inferred this from the fact that he never saw his Rebbe burn the Orlo. In another place, the Hassam Sefer writes, he was always watching his Rebbe, and he never saw Rav Nosson Adler write a prusbul before the Shemitah year begins. He says he saw him write a prusbul towards the end of the Shemitah year, as Shemitah is about to conclude. The halacha says the Shemitah of the Shemeth is the Sofa. Shemitah cancels the debts at the end of the Shemitah year, not at the beginning. There is the opinion of the Rosh. The Rosh had a lot of Rishonim had a girsa that Tosefta and Shvius that the prusbul has to be written before Shmita begins. So there are many who are choshish for that opinion, and they insist on making a prusbul before Shmita comes to a close. So the Hassam Sefer says since that's not the accepted opinion, in Shulchan Aruch we paskin that we assume that that's a misprint. That reading, that's a mistaken exagyat, it's a toy sefer. But many Rishonim had in the Tosefta that the prusbul has to be made out before Shmita begins. So he says his Rebbe was never machmer for that. It makes sense sometimes to be machmer for a minority opinion based on the concept that Eil v'Eil Dibre L'Kim Chai. And even though we only pass like one shita, but the other shita still has meaning to it, and out of respect for the other shita, it would make sense to be machmer. But if the other shita is simply based on a misprint, on a cipher, so there is no Eil v'Eil. So he says he's positive that his Rebbe because he watched his Rebbe all the time. It's positive that the Rebbe was never choshish for the opinion of the Rosh, that the principal has to be married before the Shmita year begins. Chassam Sofer was born in Frankfurt, brought up in Frankfurt, and then he moved out of his parents' home. He went with his Rebbe, and then, as the first line I mentioned, he never went back to Frankfurt. So there is a very interesting tshuva in the Maharam Shik. Maharam Shik was one of the outstanding students of the Chassam Sofer. And at that time, they were all fighting reform in the late 1800s. So the Maharam Shik had a student who was also in the rabbinate in Hungary, and he was mainly fighting reform. So this student was offered a rabbinical position in Eretz Yisrael. It's hard to believe. In the late 1800s, he was offered a rabbanus in Eretz Yisrael. We won't have to fight any reform. He'll just sit and learn and give shiurim and pass the shayla. So that's what he always wanted. He wants to fight reform. So he packed his bag and sent the letter to his rebbe, the Maharam Shik, asking for a bracha on the move. So the Maharam Shik responded, sent it back a letter, and the letter appears in the Chulas Maharam Shik and Chelik Yerideya by Hilchas Talmud Torah. I cannot give you a bracha because I think that you're doing shalaik yedin. We have our locha that ha'itik b'mitzvah, patam and ha'mitzvah. One who's involved in performing mitzvah A is not obligated to stop performing that mitzvah and to do a different mitzvah. Even though it means that the other mitzvah will be lost and gone forever. So the Maharam Shik quotes a ritva in Sukkah that since one who is oisik the mitzvah A is potter from mitzvah B, then not only is he potter, if he doesn't want to, he doesn't have to do mitzvah B, he's prohibited, he's forbidden to stop fulfilling mitzvah A in order to do mitzvah B. But since he's potter from mitzvah B, it's considered like a bar hoshus. You're not allowed to stop in the middle of mitzvah in order to take care of some dvar hoshus. So the Maharam Shik writes in his tshuva to this Talmud of his, years ago when you learned at my yeshiva, many of the Talmudim who learned in yeshiva went into business. They didn't all go into the rabbinate, so we didn't have the right to draft you into the rabbinate. You volunteered on your own, but you volunteered and you were very successful. And the rabbinate in Hungary, unfortunately, means mainly fighting reform. A little bit of learning and passing in shadows, and a lot of darshaning against the reform. So you were performing that mitzvah, you're still performing that mitzvah, you're very successful. So you want to stop performing that mitzvah of fighting reform and move to Eretz Yisrael, fulfill the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael, and fulfill a different aspect of living up to it. So he says, I don't think you're allowed to. And he quotes a story that I think is not known from any other source. He says that he heard from his Rebbe, the Chassam Sofer, that he always wanted to move back to Frankfurt. He was always chalashing to move back to Frankfurt, and at one time he was even offered the Rabbanus in Frankfurt. I don't remember if he gave me a date. He says that one time the Chassam Sofer was offered the Rabbanus in Frankfurt, and he was considering leaving Presburg and going back to Frankfurt. And the Rashi HaKol from Presburg came to him, and they were pleading with him, and they said, Rebbe, what's going to be? You were so successful in fighting reform. If you leave, we are concerned, we are afraid that everything will fall apart. The whole community will fall into the hands of the reform. So the Chassam Sofer listened to them, and he said, okay, then I'm not allowed to leave. I have to stay here. So that's what the Maharam Shik wrote to his Talmud. I think you're not allowed to leave either, even though you want to leave this mitzvah of fighting reform in order to fulfill a different mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael and to learn more Torah, to pass the Moshe Island. I don't think you're permitted to. This letter of the Maharam Shik that he said, I don't think you're permitted to move to Eretz Yisrael because Isaac Mitzvah, Patam and Amitzvah was quoted years later by Rav Chaim Eiser. Rav Kook, at that time, was the first chief rabbi in Eretz Yisrael. Rav Kook had negotiated with Rav Chaim Eiser by correspondence that he would retire from the Rabbanus in Vilna, move to Eretz Yisrael. They had an apartment all set up for him with a salary, with a title. I think it was going to be called Rosh Kopenei Agoyla or something. Some Reish Galusa, some kind of an official title. And he was going to give up his position in Vilna. And then the last minute, Rav Chaim Eiser backed out, and he sent the letter to Rav Kook that they have printed the facsimile of the letter. and he feels that he's not permitted to leave Vilna, he thought to live, he will leave Vilna, and other people will take over. Comes a time that you retire, you have to leave to work forever. So he sees that other people will take over his functions in Vilna. And the Rabbanim in Vilna convinced him that if he will leave, many things will fall apart. So he felt that the Oisik B'mitzvah, Patam and Amitzvah, he's not permitted to leave Vilna, even though he won't be able to fulfill the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael. The Maharshik, when he writes this Lashon, writes that Rabbanim who were fighting reform are like generals in the army, and they have the status like the captain of a ship, that they're not allowed to leave the battlefront until they know that all of their soldiers are secure. The captain of the ship is Achrai. It's his responsibility to see that all the passengers on the ship will be safe. So the rabbi is not allowed to leave the community if he is not sure that everyone in the community will be safe and sound in the sense of, in the religious sense. And Safsaiba's opinions are followed very often. They're quoted very often in every area of halacha. In Orachayim, in Yerudeya, in Benezach, in Shemishpot, in all four areas, all four sections of the Shulchan Aruch, his opinions are often quoted and often followed. Take, for example, the Chasam Sofer lived in Europe, so this issue never came up, but in Eretz Yisrael, it's very relevant today. The din is that when we get married, so we are Mekadosh and Isha B'Kesef. We give a ring. A ring is not Kesef. A ring is Shavu Kesef. So the Mishnah says that Shavu Kesef is Dino Kikesef. So this din applies. Shavu Kesef is Dino Kikesef in Kol HaTorah Kula, with a few exceptions. And one of those exceptions is Pinyon Maaseh Sheni. When you have Maaseh Sheni in Eretz Yisrael, so you have to be Poitev. You cannot eat the Maaseh Sheni in Yerushalayim because we have all Tameim and there's no Mizbeach. And the Maaseh Sheni is Tameim. So you have to be Poitev in the Maaseh Sheni. So the din is that when you pay the Maaseh Sheni, you can only be paid on Kesef Sheyesh Ol Ptur on cash. You cannot be paid the Maaseh Sheni on Shavu Kesef. So the question is, does that only apply to a matbea, to a coin, or to paper money as well? They're both equally legal tender, just like the coin is legal tender. The paper money is also legal tender. That's the halacha. The government declares that something is legal tender, so that's considered Kesef. So the Chasam Sofer has this finish, that perhaps paper money, is, even though it is legal tender, perhaps it doesn't have the status of kesef with respect to pinyon maaseh sheni, as well as with respect to pinyon abed. He says the din is that shavu kesef is good for pinyon abed. You don't have to give davka cash. The Gemara talks about giving a talis or an egel, a behema, for the purpose of pinyon abed, or a beged, a suter. You can give a becher, you can give whatever you want for pinyon abed, as long as it's has the value of 5 shkolas. But you cannot perform pinyon aben with karka avodah mushtaris. That was the issue that the Chasam Sofer raises, where the paper money has the status of shtaris, or has the status of kesef. So he recommended you should be machmer not to use paper money, not for pinyon maaseh sheni, not for pinyon aben, and that's taka the common practice, that people are not using paper money. Not for pinyon aben, and not for pinyon maaseh sheni. In the area of Pinyon Aben is also, my first child is a girl, so I only have one wife, Baruch Hashem. So I never had a Pinyon Aben, but there are people around who do Pinyon Aben. So the Shulchan Aruch has a discussion, what do you do in a situation where the child who needs the Pinyon Aben doesn't have a father, the father died, or the father, the father is an Ochri. Or the father, they got divorced, separated, whatever, and the husband disappeared somewhere. He's not around. So by Bris Milah, the Gemara says, the Avi Aben has to see to it that his baby has a bris. If the Avi Aben doesn't take care of it, the Bezin should take care of it. If Bezin didn't take care of it, Kol Yisrael should take care of it. And if by the time the child becomes bar mitzvah, he still doesn't have a bris, then it's his personal obligation to see to it that he gets himself a boil and he gets a bris mitzvah. But Pinyon Aben, the brisa continues, the father has to take care of the Pinyon Aben. It jumps over the second and the third step, and it says if the father father didn't take care of the opinion of men until the child became a bar mitzvah, then the child has to take care of his own opinion of men. So the Ramah and Shulchan Aruch paskins like the Rigosh, based on this Loshan HaBraisa, that no one else can do Pinyin HaBen other than the Abi HaBen, or the person himself after he reaches Bar Mitzvah. But if at the age of Yom Lamed Aleph, on the 31st day, if there's no Abi HaBen, Abi HaBen is a goy, or he's not allowed, or he's not alive, or whatever, then you have to wait till the child becomes Bar Mitzvah and he'll do his own Pinyin HaBen. So the Shach disagrees with this Ramah, and the Vilna Goyen also sides with the Shach. And in Vilna, the Shach lived in Vilna, and the Vilna Goyen lived in Vilna. So in Vilna, and much of Lithuania, that was the common practice. They would perform Pinyin HaBen. The Bezdin would perform Pinyin HaBen with a bracha on behalf of a child who would be a Yosem, not following the Ramah. The Hasam Sefer, however, said we should be choshish for the both opinions. The Ramah says you cannot do Pinyin HaBen until the child becomes Bar Mitzvah. The Shach and the Vilna Goyen think you do Pinyin HaBen right away. But Yom Laman Aleph Bezdin should do. So the Chassam Sefer suggested, and this is the practice, this was the practice in Galicia and in Hungary and other, in Poland and other areas, in Lithuania, the minute was not. But in many areas in Europe, the practice was like the Chassam Sefer, who suggested you should do twice Pinyin HaBen, each time without a bracha. On the Yom Laman Aleph, the Bezdin should perform Pinyin HaBen without a bracha. Maybe they're not accomplishing anything. Then when the child becomes Bar Mitzvah, he should do his own Pinyin HaBen. Again without a bracha. Maybe the Bezdin's Pinyin HaBen that was done 13 years ago was good enough. The Chassam Sefer has a very fascinating tshuva where he discusses the observance of Lag BaOmer. All over the world, the whole observance of a Lag BaOmer only consists of deleting Tachmon. So that doesn't bother him. Iker HaDin, we follow the opinion of the Gaonim that reciting Tachmon after Shemoneh Esrei of Shacharit and Mincha is only reshus, it's optional, and it's not a chayvah. So that's why our practice is, if there's any slight reason, any slight excuse to delete the Tachmon, but nishke velos, I will leave our tachton, and I read this on your side, Tu Bishvat, there's no good reason in the world why you shouldn't say tachton, so we delete tachton on Tu Bishvat. On other days, well, a lot of times we delete tachton. So deleting tachton on Lag BaOmer doesn't bother the Chassam Sefer. But he writes that he heard that in Eretz Yisrael in Meiron, on Lag BaOmer, they have dancing and singing, and they give the children all the haircuts, and they make a whole yontif out of it, or in other parts of the world they make a parade on Lag BaOmer. So Samhita says to make a yontif on Lag BaOmer, he said this is an Yisrael Bal Taisif. The Chumash gives us a list of the Yom Tovim, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot. The Chachamim were authorized to add on additional Yom Tovim if the events conform to the rules and regulations of Megillas Tainus. What is Megillas Tainus? Megillas Tainus is a book that was written at the time of the Second Beis HaMikdash, which starts with the month of Nisan, year Sivan, goes in order of the calendar, and lists off every yontif that was instituted by the rabbis, Tizman Bayesheni, based on which one is not permitted to fast by Tainus. The yontif, so Tosa Batainus, and some of them are also behest. So the Gemara seems like it says that there are rules and regulations. You cannot stop making a yontif whenever you please. If you have a little community wants to have a celebration, that couple wants to celebrate their 50th wedding anniversary, or the family wants to celebrate the baby's first birthday, that's a private celebration. Or a community wants to celebrate that yontif to have Yeshua. But if you want all the Klal Yisrael all over the world to celebrate one specific day, that means you're making it into a yontif. So it would constitute a violation of Bal Taisiv unless the yontif was legitimate, unless it conforms to the rules and regulations of the Gilas. So what are the rules and regulations? So the Gemara seems to say that Hatzara Shaveh Shebehem, the common denominator of all of the holidays that are listed in the Gilas Tainus, says that they all had something to do with the building of the Beis HaMikdash, preserving the Beis HaMikdash, rededicating the Beis HaMikdash, straightening out the HaKrovos HaKarbonos in the Beis HaMikdash, or straightening out the institutions of the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaGadol, the Sanhedrin, meets in the Beis HaMikdash, so when they straighten out things that were a little cockeyed in the Beis HaGadol and the Sanhedrin, they made a yontif, the Kohuna Gedolah, the high priest, is a function of the Beis HaMikdash. So there was something cockeyed with the Kohuna Gedolah and it was straightened out, so they would make a yontif. But he says, like Boimer, has nothing to do with the Beis HaMikdash, and he quotes from the Kri Chodosh, in his commentary on Shulchan Aruch, that to establish a yontif for all of Klal Yisrael that doesn't conform to these rules and regulations of the Gilas Tainas would constitute a violation of Bal Taisiv. You're not allowed to add on Yamim Taiv and Stam Aleh. He writes an interesting expression, Iyayashe Cheli Abadlina. He says, if they would listen to me, I would abolish the observance of Lag BaOmer as they have it in Meiron. I would just leave it the way we have it all over the world, to just delete Tachnor. That's all. Doesn't it fail to delete Tachnor? Doesn't necessarily mean we made it into a Yantar, because Tachnor is really only Rishus. It's not a Chayva, but to make it a Yantar by having a parade and so on. So the first Shuvah, that's what he writes. Then the second Shuvah that he has printed in the Shuvah Chatam Sefer, he backs out from that and he changes his position. But in the first Shuvah, it's very fascinating. The Chatam Sefer, in addition to his Shuvahs, wrote so many other Svarim. So one of the many other Svarim that's published is his personal diary. So he writes about, my nephew was bar mitzvah, and I gave him this bar mitzvah shetel to say. Interesting things. And then he writes, very fascinating, there was some kind of a war that was going on, and Pressburg was being attacked. South Prussian, Austrian war, I don't know. And the Jews were considering being mispalo to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that the war should end. Makes sense? Because Sakanas Nefoshes. So the Chasam Sefer writes in his diary, which was published many years ago, he said, you're not allowed to pray that the war should end. Why not? So he quotes a Gemara, where the Gemara says,
I'm not going to be able to do it. Yeah.
yaşıyormuş desin. Ben işte kısıtlısı ya hero desin. Ben de bir neydi fazla desin. Sierra did a little bit this year, but I did a little bit of it. I just not serious about it. Push it in there. Yeah, you go, shit. Very bad. That's the only half of the car. You're finished. There are bullshit in there today. Yes, that's the whole bus in there. So, I'm not going to go near the track on. So, I think you go, shit. That's the only half of the car. The whole way this. Sierra, I'm not doing it. Very bad. I'll see you in the system. There's the end. They're on strong clocks for the weakest. They go, shit. They're on strong clocks for the weakest. Very bad. I don't do this.
Yeah, it's the things that are like you and I. It's the things that are like you and I. It's the things that are like you and I. Ich habe mir Sir,
revolution of the Mahabharatas, that is your potential. See, he would answer, see, if it's not so, there's the answer.
Yes,
it was not serious.
Yeah. Ich bin Was machen